Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1374 features one classic story by Victoria Martinez. Victoria Martinez was born in Manila, the capital of the Philippines, in 1953. After college, she left Manila and spent 2 years traveling around Belgium and Luxembourg before landing a job with an oil company in Oman, where she worked for 3 years. Martinez then came to Toronto in 1988. She currently works for a law firm in Toronto. Victoria Martinez has written a series of stories of her life in the Philippines. Tonight's story, titled The Mumps, is the last of Martinez's stories to be brought to you as a podcast. This final entry presents a bright, spirited, adult daughter still living in her father's house. She survives the mumps, only to face a greater emotional pain. Let's listen now as Victoria Martinez reads her story tonight on Life Rattle. And remember, Life Rattle stories often contain language and situations that some listeners may find offensive, so listener discretion is always advised.
The Mumps by Victoria Martinez. Oh no, I have mumps! I cried as I looked at myself in the dresser mirror. I can't go to work like this. I came home the previous night with a bitter taste in my mouth, a pounding headache and tightness in the neck. There had been an epidemic of mumps at my young brother's school, and he brought the plague home. The old-fashioned nurse at work told me mumps only affected children and teenagers. I should be safe at 22, she assured me, like there's a cut-off age for getting sick. The nurse also told me I should be worried if I was a man. Apparently, when an adult male contracted mumps, the swelling of the testicles would affect his ability to produce sperm and could render him impotent. Overnight, my face expanded. At 78 pounds, I looked like a pogo, the batter-coated hot dog on a stick. I woke up with a throbbing pain in my jaws and temple. I took the thermometer from my medicine box, placed it underneath my tongue, then watched the alarm clock. After the long hand had gone around its face twice, I pulled the thermometer from my mouth, 40 degrees Celsius. As I lay back in my bed, I looked at the alarm clock again and saw that it was already 9:45. I curled underneath my bed sheet, closed my eyes, and dozed off. "Are you not going to work?" Basil, my brother, asked. Thin as an old maid teacher's pointed rod, he still had a little swelling in his face. "No," I replied. "Go away. I hate you." "What's wrong with you, huh?" he asked again. "I have the mumps. You gave it to me. Go away, you little pest." He giggled. The slam of my bedroom door reverberated in my head. The throbbing felt like a devil pounding on an anvil. "She's got the mumps," I heard Basil yell. My brother was 11 years old. Doctors had told my parents that Basil was retarded, having been born premature. He was actually autistic, but we did not know it then. Within a few minutes, I heard heavier footsteps coming up the stairs. Then the bedroom door opened. "You have the mumps?" It was my father. "Yes," I replied as I rolled over on my other side to face the wall. I pulled the sheet over my head. "Let's take a look," my father said. "It's mumps. They all look the same, and it hurts when I move." "Let me see," he barked. I rolled back on my other side to face him, but I didn't open my eyes. I pulled the sheet off my face. He felt my forehead with the back of his hand. "You have a fever. Do you want some aspirin?" he asked. I shook my head, then grimaced at the pain it caused in my jaws. Basil came back, and I heard him chuckle. "Her face is really big. I can't believe she's not had the mumps before. She's too old to have mumps." "Shh, keep quiet," my father said to him. "Let's go." I opened my eyes after they left. I thought about the big meeting at the office that morning. After all the preparation my boss and I made, I had to miss it. In 1976, I had just been promoted to assist in a population control project spearheaded by the First Lady Imelda Marcos. I had impressed Mrs. Marcos the previous week when I devised a way for her to read her speeches better by putting slashes where she should pause and double slashes where she should stop. She invited me to have coffee in her office just yesterday. Now I was sick with the mumps. I wondered if Mrs. Marcos had had the mumps yet. Because we had no telephone, I could not even call and let the office know about my condition. But at 11:45, a messenger from the office arrived at our house to find out why I had not shown up for work. I heard my father tell the messenger that I had the mumps. Our house was a typical city house in Manila, made of light wood materials so that anything that went on could be heard, sometimes even by the neighbors. I mustered all strength to get up. The little devils inside my head pounded on their anvils with even greater strength. I wrapped the bedsheet around my head and body and ran downstairs. "Hi," I said. The messenger, Martin, was a small, thin man with a mousy face, large bulging eyes, pointed nose, unusual for most Filipinos, protruding upper bite, and no chin. In the office, we called him Ichabod Crane. Martin stood just inside the door, but as soon as he saw me, he stepped back outside, a few good steps away from the door. I heard my little brother suppressing a laugh. "Tell Mrs. D I have the mumps," I said. "Okay," Martin said. He bowed slightly and lifted his hand at me. "Don't be offended, but I haven't had the mumps, so..." He turned to leave. "Oh, sure. Just tell Mrs. D I will be away for at least a week." I wasn't sure he heard me. When I closed the door, I thought about the many little Martins that the world would miss if Martin contracted the mumps and became impotent. "What are you laughing at?" I turned to Basil. "Lazarus, rise!" Basil shouted. He stood atop a wooden bench with his right arm stretched up to the ceiling, the left arm extended towards me, emulating Jesus. Holy Week had just ended. The boy had watched too many Jesus films on TV. "Rise!" he grinned, his eyes reduced to thin slits and his big, uneven teeth showing. "Piss off, monkey boy," I said. I started for the stairs. Basil hopped like a monkey on top of the bench, scratched his armpits like a monkey, and made monkey sounds. "I told you to stop." I walked over and hit him on his arm. He stuck out his tongue at me, scratched the top of his head, and continued his monkey dance. "Stop it, you two," my father said. Then he turned to Basil. "Don't piss her off now. She's sick." "Can I borrow your dictionary?" Basil asked me. "No," I replied. "Come here," my father said as I got ready to go upstairs again. "Let's put some vinegar and bluetint on your jaw and neck." "No," I protested. "That's just quack." But before I could finish my sentence, my father had approached me and dabbed blue-colored malt vinegar on my face. "Apache!" Basil yelled. He started to dance like the Indians in the Western movies that he watched. He made noises while tapping his mouth with the palm of his hand. Please tell him to stop, I told my father. He's making my headaches worse, you know. Stop. He took a side glance at my brother and laughed at the sight of his thin, lanky frame dancing in the middle of the living room. Leave your sister alone. I ran up the stairs and went back to bed. I put my pillow over my ears so I wouldn't hear Basil and his Indian noises. Geronimo! I drifted into deep sleep with the image of my brother doing his Indian dance in the living room. For 3 days, I fell in and out of sleep. The few times I got up from the bed, I looked in the mirror and got disgusted with my swollen face and blue tint on it. My neck and jaw hurt too much to move. I could not eat. When I did, I threw up. When I threw up, the more my face hurt. I smelled sour from the vinegar sponge my father put on my neck. He wouldn't allow me to take a shower. He believed a lot of old superstitions, especially about sickness. My sisters and I called him the Quack's Quack. Meanwhile, Basil kept vigil by my bedroom door, asking me every half hour if I felt better. On the fourth morning, the swelling on my face had subsided. I took a sponge bath, changed clothes, and started to eat solid food. I rested in my rocking chair in my bedroom. Basil sat on the wooden floor at the foot of the bed reading my Merriam-Webster. My father entered carrying a tray of hot tea and warm porridge. I cleaned your room, he said, as he placed the tray on top of the dresser. He motioned his hand around the room. There's nothing to clean, I said. I looked around and for the first time I noticed the neatly piled newspapers and magazines, the folded clothes which I had left draped on the chair, the shoe boxes with their lids on, arranged underneath the dresser, which I presumed contained my shoes, which I normally left behind the door. I always clean my room, I added. I put away the garbage you keep underneath your bed, my father continued. I have no garbage underneath my bed, I said. A bolt of pain shot from my neck to the top of my head as I bent down to look under the bed. When I learned how to type in high school at 16, I started to write down the stories about my father and my mother and their relatives, which I had heard, and compiled them over the years. The box, originally a container for blank bond papers, was half filled with written manuscripts. Where's my manuscript box? I asked. My head reeling from pain and whiplash, I stood up and asked my father again. What did you do with my papers? I burned them. They're garbage. I don't know where you get those stories, my father replied. His voice sounded grave, his brows knitted, the corners of his mouth drooped. I don't want you to write stupid things, he continued. Who gave you permission to take my things and read them? This is my house. I do as I please, he barked. Well, this is my room, and what's in here is mine, and you have no business poking your nose in it, I replied. I ran to my bedroom window, opened the shutters, and looked out the front yard. A pile of ashes sat in the corner of the yard next to the concrete fence. I recognized a piece of the box's logo that had not burned. You have no right to read my work, much less burn them, I told him when I faced him again. I sat on the edge of my bed, suddenly feeling very tired. I felt so defeated. I have a right to read them and get rid of them because those stories were about me, and they're lies. If you want stories about me, you ask me. He wagged his finger in front of my face. I wanted to grab his hand and bite his finger. I felt like I wanted to kill him. I turned my face away. For 7 years, I had compiled those stories. Half of those stories my mother told me. She died last year. Who else could tell me the stories he had burned? You have no fucking right, you fucking bastard, I said, waiting for a blow to my head or a slap in my face. You liar bastard, I started to cry. His gun down, you know. He didn't hear you, Basil said. He looked up from the dictionary that lay open on his lap. He set down the book on the floor, stood up, and walked towards me. You can write the stories again, Basil continued, touching my shoulders lightly. He stood still in front of me. I glanced at him. His young, innocent face stared at me, smiling, the deep left dimple more prominent than the right. I lay down on the bed. Basil went to pick up the book from the floor and walked back beside me. He didn't burn the papers. I did, he said. I know, but he asked you, I'm sure, I said, sobbing. Basil knelt on the floor and propped his chin on the edge of the bed. He kept some of them. They're in his drawers, the one with a lock, he whispered, a naughty sparkle in his eyes. I saw him. He was reading them last night. He paused for a few seconds. But don't tell him I told you, he said more softly as he placed his finger to his lips. He smiled, then turned his attention to the dictionary and continued to read. I stared at the ceiling. If my father had kept some of the pages, I thought, the manuscript's contents must be important to him. I wondered which stories he had kept.
That was Victoria Martinez reading her story, The Mumps. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1374. Arnie Ackman recorded Victoria Martinez reading her story. My name is Virginia Ashbury. Life Rattle is produced from Toronto and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.